Peace Lambs, from the Seven Promises of Hope, authored by Jan McKenzie. I once had a boss who called me Barbara. "Barbara, figure out how to do that and get back to me, will you?" she'd suggest sweetly. She was very big on getting us to figure out how to do things and then doing them. I know that sounds healthy on the surface, like the ability to delegate appropriately, or maybe like a hands-off management style preferred by a wide range of employees universally. However, there was a glitch in this system. Things just seemed to spiral out of control whenever you were bold enough to ask a question about how to get something done. The next thing you know, you were in charge of an entire project you didn't know how to do, and your current team members had been asked to form a brand new team with you so everyone could figure out how to complete the project together. Worst of all, your original question more than likely remained unanswered. For instance, if you said something like, "How do you plan to communicate that new policy?" she would inevitably say, "Barbara, will you please figure that out and get back to me with the plan, finished communication pieces, and timeline by noon tomorrow?" Again, she would smile sweetly and move quickly on to the next topic. Something just wasn't right. Eventually, we all learned to stop asking those pesky questions. Ah, well. In the end, all the hyper-delegating and tricky question-answering seemed minor compared to the fact that I just cringed every time she called my name, or rather, every time she called me Barbara. You see, my name is Jan. That's right, Jan, not Barbara. If you think about it for even a moment, you will realize that those names aren't even vaguely similar. It was as if I were a completely different person once she arrived on the scene, not the Jan I had been all those years before she showed up. If you are thinking that you aren't that great at remembering names either, I feel your pain. I struggle in that area too. However, I have made a point to remember the names of those who report directly to me, even if I can't remember everyone else. It just seems like the obvious thing to do. What made things worse for me in all this was that my boss seemed perfectly capable of remembering her other direct reports, consistently calling out each of their names correctly. She did call another team member Laura a few times, but her name was Lori, so at least that was close. No one was being called Jan. I was beginning to have a distinctly uneasy feeling about the probability of a productive relationship with this new manager of mine. I don't want to misrepresent what was happening. She didn't always call me Barbara, only every third or fourth time she addressed me. The other members of our team caught on to what was happening and started calling me Barbara Jan, in reference to the Beach Boys song Barbara Ann. Occasionally, they just couldn't keep in their amusement, laughing out loud once during a meeting when the mysterious name-calling occurred. This caused my boss to hesitate momentarily and look at us in apparent confusion. "You called her Barbara!" said one of my laughing co-workers in response to her puzzled look. "Oh, did I do that again? I keep doing that, don't I?" she replied, and then continued on with her agenda of getting us to figure out how to do things. It was at that point that I stopped hoping for an apology, or even an acknowledgement that the habit was not only annoying, but potentially rude. After all, I sat in the office right next door to her. She only had 7 direct reports, and she had spent her entire first day in a classroom with me, standing in front of her, helping her to get familiar with our company. Shouldn't that have counted for something in the name-remembering department? To put all this in perspective, let me tell you a little story. One year, when I was a child, I'd been given 3 tiny ducklings for Easter. I loved those little ducks and named them Huey, Dewey, and Louie. Every day when I came home from school, I would run to the backyard and get them out of their cage. Then we would go for long walks through the woods near the house. How did I keep us all together, you may wonder? I just started walking, and they all followed right behind me in a little row. Apparently, in a new environment, whatever or whoever you come across early in your journey makes an impression on you, so that a kind of bonding occurs. It seems I impressed myself on the little ducklings, and, as a result, we could march together as well as a highly trained military unit. That's why I was a little surprised that not only had I not made an impression on my new boss, I had made an impression for someone named Barbara. I guess corporate America is a little short on the bonding instinct. I eventually left the company. Friends and co-workers looked at me worriedly and asked, "Why are you leaving?" And I responded simply, she calls me Barbara. After all, what else was there to say? I did throw in that I was going to write a book, but I'm pretty sure no one, including me, thought this story would be in it. Today, I'm sitting in a bookstore cafe and have been discreetly watching an unusual duo sitting side by side at two small tables against the wall. There is a slightly older man with a book and a cup of coffee in front of him. He is half reclining with his feet on the chair in front of him and one arm across the back of the bench on which he sits. Right next to him, at her own small table, is a young woman, maybe a college student, who also sits casually with her feet on a chair and a computer in front of her. She is slouching over the computer a little, as if she were working on it in bed instead of in a cafe. He is talking, apparently, to her. There is no one else around, and their elbows are practically touching. She is looking at her computer, eyes glued to the screen, fingers poking slowly at the keys. Not once has she looked in his direction, nor he in hers. Yet, he is talking rapidly, with barely an occasional pause in his ongoing monologue. He is smiling, so I'm assuming it's an entertaining conversation. All this makes me ponder how we connect with others. Have the busy rush of life and the onset of the age of technology made it unnecessary to remember people's names or to look at them when you talk to them? Have I missed an important transition in our culture where now people sit side by side without knowing each other's names and carry on a conversation? I know it's a waste of time to judge these things. Communication is a fragile business at best, and we all stumble at times. I, too, recently almost missed something very important in a conversation with a wonderful person at work. Just because I remember the names of my direct reports and try to look at people when they're talking to me doesn't mean that I don't sometimes mess things up, too. My friend's name is, well, let's just call him Ted for now. That's not his real name, but then, does it really matter? Ted and I had been with the same company for years and had had many opportunities to work together on projects. The week before I was to leave the company, Ted came to see me. It was clear he was concerned about my leaving and my well-being. I suppose because I had been with the company for so long. He knew it was a big change for me and was wondering what I would do to fill my time, find a new routine, and start a new life. Also, he wanted me to know how much he valued what we had accomplished together. If you ever have a bad day out there, a day when you aren't sure if you are valued or aren't sure which way to go, I want you to remember how much you have helped me and my team while you were here. This company is a better place because of the work you've done with us, he told me sincerely. By the way, he was looking me in the eye when he said it, which helped me to believe he meant what he was saying. I thanked him for the kind words and told him not to worry. During my previous year, I had been learning to trust God and live one day at a time. My experiences, though not pleasant, had helped prepare me for the big change of leaving my job. As I was telling him the specifics of what had happened to cause this realization, he suddenly looked at me and said, "I have a very similar story. Would you like to hear it?" Would I like to hear it? I live for the words, "I have a story," because this is where I find God most often. In stories that live right in the neighborhood, or at work, or sometimes on the plane, or in a cab. "Yes," I said excitedly. He looked at me and began his story. "Recently, my family and I went to Hawaii for vacation," Ted said. "I have to admit that I was immediately a wee bit jealous, thinking of the swaying palm trees and lovely beaches." I recovered quickly from this little distraction with some eye contact and a nod of the head, indicating he should continue. "One day," he said, "we changed hotels, and somewhere along the line, I realized my daughter had left her swimsuit at our previous location. After calling the old hotel to confirm that they did indeed have the suit, I jumped in the car and headed out over unfamiliar streets to retrieve it. At some point, the car in front of me got my attention." He paused. "Actually, it wasn't a car, but rather a van of some sort. Not like a FedEx vehicle, but more like a local furniture delivery van. Something was written across the back of the truck. When we stopped at the light, I took a second to read it. Peace Lambs, 91, it said." Ted was getting ready to go on when I interrupted. "Peace Lambs?" I asked, sure that I was missing something important here. I scrolled through my brain to see if I could find any connection with this little phrase, but nothing came to mind. "Peace Lambs?" I asked again. "Yes," he said. "You know, like Psalms, only with the letters mixed up." When he saw my blank look, he spelled it out for me. P-S-L-A-M-S. Peaslams. Talk about a misunderstanding. I was picturing tiny sheep bleating calmly while he was talking about the Bible. The mix-up may be more explainable than Barbara versus Jan, but nevertheless, there it was. What's more is that it happened even though I was sitting right across from him, maintaining eye contact and giving him my undivided attention. Well, except for the part about daydreaming of going to Hawaii. "Ah," I responded, "so you saw something on a truck about a psalm." "Yes, and I immediately felt that it was something important to me personally and that I should go home and read it. When I got back to the hotel with the swimsuit, I picked up my Bible and read Psalm 91. The whole psalm is beautiful, but verses 14 and 15 seemed to lodge in my heart unexpectedly. Ted pulled out his iPhone and looked up the psalm on his Holy Bible app. This is what he read. "Because he loves me, says the Lord, I will rescue him. I will protect him, for he acknowledges my name. He will call upon me, and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will deliver and honor him." Ted read with passion, and then looked up at me and said, "God said that because I acknowledged him, he was going to honor me." I couldn't get over it. Love me, maybe, but honor me? And when I was in trouble? I wasn't having any trouble that I knew of, but the message was loud and clear. Whatever was coming, God had rescue plans in place. The next day, while relaxing at the hotel, Ted got a call from a contact back home. "I heard from someone in our industry that there is a confidential recruitment search out for your job," his friend told him. "It looks like your boss is trying to replace you while you're on vacation. I hate to call you like this, but I thought you might want to know." Stunned at the news, Ted thanked his friend and hung up the phone. He was thousands of miles from home, on a well-earned rest with his family, and he had just learned that he would probably be replaced in his job when he returned to the States. "I've never been a confrontational type of person, Jan, you know that. When he called me by my real name, it was music to my ears. Funny how you can take the little things for granted. I like to get things done, but I don't like conflict. However, I knew I would have to do something when I returned. I would have to confront my boss. I couldn't just sit around and wait to be informed about my fate," he said. I immediately thought of the words I had seen on the back of the delivery truck. They had led me to read a message, a psalm, that assured me that God would honor me and rescue me from trouble. I knew in my heart that I would have to engage in some uncomfortable conversations when I went back to work, but it seemed God had a handle on the situation. I spent a fair amount of time during the rest of my vacation thinking about it. When I returned to work, I continued to wonder how to begin the dialogue with my boss. I am a planner. Usually I plan my conversations. I don't like to go in cold or unprepared. I need to know what I want to say in advance, and I even like to have a backup plan, Ted said, looking away a little and remembering. But no matter how much I thought about it, I just couldn't figure out a good way to approach this. I kept going back to Psalm 91. I will rescue him. I will protect him. I will be with him in trouble, and I will honor him, is what the Lord had spoken to me through his word. I prayed, repeated the scriptures, and finally went into my boss's office and told him what I had found out. He was surprised and, it seemed, sorry that I had discovered all this from someone other than himself. However, once the topic was on the table, we had a calm conversation. He acknowledged he didn't want our parting to be immediate or on bad terms and agreed to work with me on when and how I would leave. I'm happy to say the company has been fair to me during the transition. Ted took a deep breath and said, I'll be leaving in about a month. My wife and I have decided to take some time off and ask God to show us what is next before we make any plans. I could see he was uneasy facing the unknown. My heart went out to him. Still, I figured if God had taken the time to communicate with Ted on the streets of Hawaii, he would be sure to help him move on to the next phase of his life. Ted glowed when he told his story. He was amazed at the way things unfolded for him, and after listening to his adventure, I added the back of a truck to my list of unusual places from which God speaks to us. I guess in the long run, it doesn't matter whether your boss at work remembers your name, looks at you when they speak, or puts out a search to replace you while you are on vacation. There is a God who knows your name, and he knows just where you are and what you will need. There is no place you can go where he cannot find you, and no battle you must face that he is not aware of. When you get the nudge that he's speaking to you, get off the computer and listen. You might want to make eye contact with some of his works, like a beautiful sunset, a bird in flight, or maybe even a peace lamb. God has promised to provide for us. Sometimes he even gives us our daily bread on the back of a delivery truck, so pay attention. If you listen when he speaks, you can't help but find hope. Hope. Now that is a name worth remembering.